Hello and welcome to The Roadmap, the podcast from the commercial technology team here at Bristow's. My name is Annika Pohl and I'm an associate in the Bristow's tech team. With me today is a partner in our team, Vic Karana. Welcome, Vic, to The Roadmap.
Thanks, Annika. How are you doing today?
Yeah, good, thank you. Had a great weekend.
Good.
Today, we're going to be discussing everything to do with AI and data, and in particular, how tech suppliers are using their customers' data, what you as a customer could potentially do to protect yourself from suppliers using your data, and also potential ways that value can be extracted from data from a contractual point of view. Vic, can you kick us off on some of the different ways that data is being used by AI and ML?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Annika. I mean, you sort of covered it in a way. I mean, there's so many angles and tangents we can talk about AI about. But one thing we've been noticing in maybe the last sort of 6 months especially is that there's a lot of technology and IT suppliers out there who are doing this, you know, they're embarked in this huge arms race to develop and embed AI into their products and services across all kind of enterprise IT. So it's not just the kind of buzzy new consumer products and services like ChatGPT and the like. It's, you know, across the whole enterprise service stack. And then we sort of been figuring out, and we've been helping some of them actually, with how they actually construct the underlying data sets that they use to train their AI. And so what we're sort of figuring out slowly, and we're seeing this on the customer side too in negotiations, is really those data sets they're using are often, you know, aggregations or databases or data lakes of their actual customers' data. So one thing we've been advising customers on IT deals about is, well, being aware that suppliers are looking at ways to use their data to train their AI. You know, when that might be reasonable, what suppliers are looking at and the kind of holes in contracts they're sort of identifying, because really we're seeing that there are some risks to customers if they sort of inadvertently go down this path of sharing data in a way that they don't quite understand what the suppliers are doing with.
So asking the bleedingly obvious question, this must be causing issues for customers. What are some of those issues?
Yeah, thanks for the question. I think there's sort of two main categories of issues we're dealing with. And the first one is around contract gaps, so gaps in contracts. So we're aware that in existing contracts and in new contracts, suppliers are scrutinizing some key clauses in those contracts to work out if they can leverage those terms as a legal way to use their customers' data in ways that customers don't necessarily understand. So they can end up including that in data lakes that they can use to train their AI. And the risk to customers there really is you just end up with your data being used either without your knowledge or in ways you don't understand or without a commercial upside. And then the other category of issues, sort of second category, which I expect we'll unpack a little bit more, is what I sort of call AI inside, where IT suppliers are already using AI or generative AI or LLMs in their products and services, sometimes in slightly unexpected ways. And there's a few sub-issues there. Like one, there's going to be some specific legal issues if you're just not aware that the services you're receiving include AI and how they're being delivered. And also because if you're just not aware, then you don't actually get to participate in some of the upside and share in some of the gains of those suppliers using those tools in that way.
So how are suppliers sort of able to use their customers' data? Surely there must be a contractual basis to do this.
Yeah, so this is the kind of that first main category of risk we talked about just now on contractual gaps. So yeah, I think suppliers are looking at their existing suites of contracts they've got with their customers, realizing that to get further ahead in that arms race I mentioned, they're going to be looking at saying, okay, well, all these customers on these contract terms, can we actually use their data in a way that could feed our AI strategies? And I think that boils down to them looking at some pretty key terms in the contracts. So they're looking at terms like confidentiality, data use clauses, IP clauses. But before we even get into any of those, I mean, they're looking at just the term and the survival clauses in their contracts, because quite commonly, if the contracts that they've got in place have either lapsed or expired, they're looking at that to say, well, hang on, if the contract's out of term, that might mean some of the restrictions that we were living with or what we could do with our customers' data might not apply anymore. And if they're holding on to that data, they haven't been subject to an obligation to delete or return it, they're sort of thinking, hang on, we can use that data in a pretty unrestricted way, not subject to confidentiality or use restrictions. Yeah, feed that into databases that feed models and use it on that basis. So we're sort of advising customers to say, okay, well, look, make sure your contracts are in term. And also when you're negotiating new ones on key data use restrictions and confidentiality, check whether they survive termination, because suppliers are looking at that too. If they don't expressly survive termination, then they're using that as a good basis to use the data. And then so there's other clauses too that they're scrutinizing pretty closely to say, can we get away with using data in a broader way than just servicing this particular customer? So confidentiality, classic clause that you'd expect me to mention here as some way of using the data. They're looking for gaps. Quite often, you know, a well-drafted confidentiality clause we see will define confidential information pretty broadly, basically maybe even everything, every bit of information or data the customer shares. A company with a pretty narrow right for the supplier to use the data, only to really perform the contract. So if that's the position you've got in your customer contract, then that's probably fine. But there's a whole range of ways we see those clauses and confidentiality definitions drafted, and quite a lot of loopholes that suppliers are focusing on. So for example, we see some confidentiality clauses define the protected information as only what's been marked confidential. Which, you know, is a bit problematic because, A, you know, are your teams always going to remember to do that? And also in, you know, full-on outsourcing or managed services where the suppliers are accessing your systems to provide you with the service, well, they're coming across information that you'd expect to be protected as confidential, but actually that's just data that sits in your systems, not something that you're, you know, even explicitly handing over the fence to a supplier. So you probably haven't marked that as confidential. And we also see, yeah, those kinds of definitions of confidential information, which define it as, you know, just the information that could be reasonably considered to be confidential. So that's probably a narrower category than all information you share, and maybe a bit subjective. And suppliers who are keen to train models, feed data lakes, are taking quite purposive interpretations on those definitions. So that's a whole area of confidentiality that suppliers are looking at.
I guess that they would also be looking at some of their intellectual property licensing under the contract as well.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, you might think you're covered because you've got a decent, well-protected confidentiality clause, and you look down at the IP clause and you sort of think as a customer, well, I'm really looking at that to check that I've got the license rights I need to use a bit of IP or some tools or technology. But quite often, you know, sub clause 3 or 4 down the list in the IP clause, suddenly we see that the customer's granted a really broad IP license to use the data. And here you've got the issue of, you know, overlapping and potentially inconsistent drafting with the confidentiality clause. And then suddenly we see the IP clause being looked at by the supplier to say, oh, we've got a broad right to use the data here. And data is maybe differently defined to confidential information. But again, pretty broad. And especially in an AI world, we see quite a lot of IP clauses anticipating that there might be some machine learning outputs generated from the customer data. So really smart customers are putting that clause in to acknowledge that that could occur. A supplier could generate some outputs from it, and then trying to assign the ownership, allocate the ownership of that output either to itself or to make sure that the supplier couldn't expressly do that in ways that they're looking to do that implicitly.
Yeah, I find that really interesting. It's something that we've been drafting lately ourselves as well.
Yeah.
Are there certain things that customers could do to protect their data when they're entering into a contract or perhaps revisiting a contract with an existing supplier, but they have the possibility to renegotiate specific clauses because they have additional leverage at this point in time?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And this is where some of the advisory work we do comes in, because all those issues I mentioned around confidentiality, data use clauses, IP clauses, you know, ultimately, it's, a lot of the time comes down to the drafting of those terms. Are they specific enough? Are they protecting you? But there's a whole raft of other things you consider also. So, for example, if you are sharing data, maybe try to only share it in the contract on the basis that it's anonymized and aggregated, so the supplier can only use it if they have anonymized it and aggregated it up with other data.
And that should basically happen every single time. There's not really a reason why you'd be sharing non-personal data that you don't require to be anonymized and aggregated. There's a few exceptions, but not many.
I think that's right. And I think when, you know, when you come to personal data, obviously, you know, GDPR and other data protection law kicks in there anyway. So the suppliers of process are really there under a legal duty not to do much more with it, you know, when we talk about training tools anyway. So they'll be doing that. But I also mean non-personal data in terms of just sensitive or commercially sensitive business data. Even that, imagine that you are a pharmaceutical company and you know that you're one big pharmaceutical company client of that supplier. Can they really anonymize your data so that you wouldn't be identified? So if they were going to go produce some analytic on how a certain market interacts with IT, and they're going to include you in their pharma sector, well, actually, that could well have the potential to identify you anyway. So I don't think anonymize and aggregation, even aside from personal data, just for normal business data, is a panacea or a big guarantee. I think it needs some close, careful thinking to say, is there any way in which this could be done and I'd be comfortable with it because they've aggregated it in the right sort of way?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that that's why it's so important that lawyers are drafting within the context of the specific deal. Something that you mentioned earlier, Vic, was a confidentiality clause. And within that, I think there was a recommendation. Would you be able to make that recommendation explicit?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, we talked about some kind of fuzzy drafting on the definitions of confidential information. I mean, personally, I'm acting for a customer. I'd like to define it really broadly to include essentially all kinds of information and materials I share with my vendor, but then back that up with some non-exhaustive examples of what's particularly sensitive. So if that's my pricing or internal methodology or business secrets, there's no harm in adding to a list on a non-exclusive basis. And I think another area that is there's an adjunct to this which could help solve for some of the issues around sharing data is around information security. So we kind of think of information security as something the InfoSec people come up with in policies and ways to secure the data from breach or loss. But actually, a lot of organizations like public sector, financial services, some of their policies that they'd like to flow through to suppliers would require a separation or segregation of their data from other customer or other business data the supplier is holding. And you can think of that as one route to protect against this issue, because if the vendors are under an obligation to always keep your data logically separate, then actually that might well prevent them, in addition to the kind of front-end clauses we've talked about, from aggregating it together with other data sets or putting it somewhere else into a machine learning environment or something. So I think the InfoSec area is a way to explore protecting this issue too.
Vic, something that lawyers love to chat about is limitations of liabilities and indemnities. Is there anything that we could talk about to do with that here?
Yeah, definitely. Because, yeah, again, you know, it's an area of the contract where we're thinking about, well, what could go wrong? And if it went wrong, what could we recover? But I think it's also important to think of the limitations of liability and indemnity as a disincentive to vendors from doing kind of weird stuff with your data as well in this context, because some of the suppliers who are exploring and scrutinizing those contracts, even if they're starting to get comfortable that they might be able to justify the right to use the data on a, you know, maybe a pretty broad interpretation of some of the confidentiality and data clauses, they then are factoring in what the risk profile looks to them if they're getting that decision wrong or if they're challenged on it. So if they end up with, you know, very high or high caps or unlimited liabilities or broad indemnities that would kick in if they got that wrong, that is informing their decision making about whether they do or go ahead and use your data for other purposes. So I think that's something to think about.
And then, of course, there's a commercial relationship.
Here, I think we're not necessarily saying, you know, be scary and go around just constantly suing your vendors. But I think if you're known as a customer in the market that takes contracts quite seriously and holds your vendors to account generally, well, suppliers take that kind of relationship into account on that same point about whether they then go ahead with a decision to say, look, on balance, we think we can just about justify using the data to train our AI. You know, it's Again, it's just good contract management and governance, but suppliers do sometimes put their customers into different buckets of who we think actually is going to be really looking at this contract that we couldn't get away with much from, and other customers they have that they think take a more lax approach to contract management and enforcing contracts.
Amazing. So those are all really good tips. Earlier you mentioned, Vic, this concept of AI inside or AI behind the scenes, an existing product or service that perhaps you receive, or you're acquiring a new product or service and you're not aware that there is an AI component, except suppliers are making it pretty visible these days if there is AI or any AI element as part of their marketing materials. But what are some of the risks to do with this for customers?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting because obviously a lot of customers are engaging with their vendors to actually implement AI. So when that's being done consciously, you know, that's a whole different issue, a whole different podcast. I think we're here talking about AI behind the scenes, right, as you say. So I think the risk to the customers, if you're just your vendor's using AI and you just don't know about it, well, there's just a few different buckets of risks, right, just to think about. Like confidentiality, I mentioned in a different context. But you know, we are aware of some gen AI models potentially regurgitating data that's put into it. And potentially exposes it out there. And that kind of leads me to talk about broader confidential protection and trade secret protection. If you are disclosing your data to those models, even if you're not really aware of it or consciously doing it, you then risk losing those protections around your data that legally protect it. I think there's an issue around IP as well. So I think, I mean, these are well documented, the issues around Gen AI and IP. But the fact is, if your vendor is using Gen AI to produce content in deliverables that you think you'll own, well, it's kind of interesting at the moment about whether there's copyright or other IP vested in those outputs. You know, we've had the US Copyright Office sort of saying case by case, but it's quite possible there isn't copyright in some Gen AI content. It's an evolving area. But if you're looking to rely on what's being produced, if you think about coding tools that are generated using AI, you're looking to own that software. Well, it's kind of untested at the moment whether there is copyright in that. So that's something to be aware of. Similar with the outputs and whether they might infringe a third party's AI. So you're going to want to check that an IP indemnity would cover that. If you think about the OpenAI class actions that are in train and the Getty instability AI cases, well, this is all involves, you know, potential third parties saying that their data is being infringed. If you're using that, then you know, you could come in across as there too.
So what are some of the mitigations that customers could implement for AI behind the scenes?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few areas. I mean, on AI policies, we're sort of seeing customers flow through to suppliers a version of what AI policies they've already got in place that at least require suppliers to disclose and be transparent about their use of AI, a little bit like how the market's dealt with open source down the years. And also to say to vendors, look, when you do use generative AI, we want you to be using like the most protective terms in your supply chain. So, you know, those enterprise versions of those Gen AI terms often, you know, do include IP assignments, or at least say that those model providers don't assert rights. So gives you a better chance of owning the content and allows your supplier to opt out of the Gen AI model provider from using data for training. We talked a bit about indemnity as well. A lot of the Gen AI firms out there are offering different levels of indemnity protection. So if you're getting Gen AI on your supply chain, I think you'd want your vendor, your primary vendor, to be flowing those through to you. On the hallucination side, I mean, that's an issue that sort of related here. You know, there's not really any mitigation from the AI underlying firm's terms there. There's no warranty about the accuracy, really. So that's really about you and your prime supplier managing the use cases. Are you relying on the use of AI to directly interact with your end users and customers that could make stuff up potentially? Or are you using it in a way that, look, it's going to be tested, you know, you're going to use it for coding, and that any issues or bugs or defects are going to be picked up in testing, that might be a fine use case.
Vic, this was a truly fascinating discussion. I'm sure that our listeners got a lot out of it. Thank you so much for your time today and your wisdom and knowledge around this topic.
Thanks, Annika. That's great. Thanks for having me on.
We hope this podcast will be useful for lawyers, procurement professionals, and other business leads alike. We'd love for it to be as interactive as possible. So if you have a particular interest area or topic you'd like us to cover in the future, perhaps it's an issue that you come across regularly or is impacting your business, please do get in touch with us at theroadmap@bristows.com or use the hashtag TheRoadmapPod. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back very soon with our next episode on The Roadmap.